Welcome home. We are WNST, Towson, Baltimore. Baltimore Positive. We are positively at Coco's. I'm sitting with the back to the bar. I have had the most delicious appetizer meal in the city. It's already in my belly, and the show hasn't started yet. Coconut shrimp, spelled with two K's. And I have co-hosts today. They don't know that they're going to be spelled with a K, and they're both writers, which makes it even worse. We're here on behalf of the Maryland Lottery, and if I get my newest scratch-offs together, because I have some Pac-Mans to give away, but I'm here to talk. You're going to get the fresh ones, Max and Allen. Ooh, they're red. Look at that. Gold Rush 7 Doublers from the Maryland Lottery. Your friends at Liberty Pure Solutions, bringing things together and putting us out on the road, as well as Jiffy Lube Multicare. We're going to be doing Fleet Week in Fells Point. We're going to be at Cooper's on Friday. Got some other guests down there. None as great as the guests we have here today, Coco's, of course. We're also going to be at at Costas next Thursday before the Orioles beat the Yankees, something we can all agree on. And then we'll be at Pappas in Parkville on the 25th as well. Alan McCallum is here. He has just walked in fresh. Max Weiss is here. She is the executive editor?
Editor-in-chief.
Chief. I always forget the chief part. Editor-in-chief.
I expect that whenever I walk into
a room. It's very presidential.
Yeah.
Alan, I made a huge mistake today, not in inviting you or Max or both of you together. I invited Max early. No offense to you, but like Max is like, she likes Coco. She's been here before. She needs to come on. She won some hotsy-totsy award that she's going to be too modest to talk about. No, you're not. No, you.
I think you know me a little too well for that.
She's the coolest person here.
Of course. So I know you love Max, and I know you met Max on Zoom with me years ago, like during the plague, during Oscar week.
This was like 3 years ago.
Yeah, I had no idea that you guys had gotten together in the real world. I thought I was surprising her. And it turns out, like, you come and you're like, what's up, Max? And, like, I just thought, like, I didn't know you knew each other well. So I'm going to let you take over and do movies now.
I wouldn't go nuts and say we know each other well. We've spent a nice afternoon, a morning together.
First of all, you ruined the surprise already because
I got to fix your mics too. Go ahead, keep going.
You tagged me and Alan in a Facebook post.
Yeah, I did it an hour ago.
So the surprise is done. Then, yes, Alan and I have had we've had breakfast, like a brunch.
You've never gone on a movie together
with your old partner in crime, Don Moeller.
Well, then I know that was fascinating.
Don is the man.
He's the connector.
He's
the straw that stirs the drink.
He really is. So yes, Alan and I, we go way back.
Have you ever seen a movie together?
No,
we have not.
All right, you both were among the movie files when I had the most magnificent experience of my moviedom this year. When I saw in D-Box.
I know what you're going
to
say.
D-Box, I went to see Talking Heads Stop Making Sense.
I knew you were going
to
say that.
I texted both of you at the first day. Within 5 minutes, I wanted to stop the film because I was texting both of you out of the chair while I was giggling, you know. And I'm like, you got to come see this. And I talked John Allen, rock star John Allen, and Rasig. And Rasig will be my other co-host here later today. He lives in a neighborhood, lives two blocks away, into actually doing it. So we were the only ones in the theater. I mean, again, I don't know that anybody's – have you done D-Box?
I have not done D-Box.
Have you done D-Box?
No.
For anything?
No.
Have you considered it?
Not really.
I have considered it. My only – IMAX is my regular enhanced movie experience that I've done.
Where does one watch IMAX?
In an IMAX theater.
In an IMAX theater.
Max.
But are there any local theaters?
You're always IMAX.
Yeah. Right.
Columbia has one.
Columbia.
There's one in Bethesda.
Arundel Mills.
There's one in Arundel Mills.
That's where I went to. I went to Arundel Mills.
Towson has something that it's like enhanced, but it's not IMAX.
Yeah, I've been to a bunch of enhanced movies, but not. I don't think.
What's enhanced?
Like louder.
I don't go to movies. Okay, so come on.
Like louder and more sort of.
Bigger screen, right. Generally speaking.
It's like a step. It's just a step below IMAX.
Yeah.
I've been to 5 movies in the last 10 years. You know this.
Yes.
That's why I bring you together to educate, because you're into this. But I had this experience that you haven't even had, which is weird, you know? Because the D-Box thing to me, my wife was going to do it for the Tom Cruise movie. By the way, I had Glenn
Top
Powell.
Gun
you ever heard of him, Glenn Powell?
Of course. Hitman. We can talk about
he
that.
He sat at my table and did a half an hour with me, and it's
what?
On the internet. He was on with the pretty gal that was in Top Gun with him. Give me her name. She was the pretty
Jennifer Connelly.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't remember her name.
Yeah,
now.
There were some actresses.
Okay, so I had hint, the two stars.
Yes.
Came on my show in Miami, and then the plague happened.
Right.
And the movie didn't get released.
Got pushed
right.
Back 3 years.
So
right.
Like all these years later, when the movie got released, the video was up, and the whole shtick. And it's not shtick. My wife thinks it's shtick too. I've never seen Top Gun.
Okay.
So
that's just embarrassing, Nestor.
Yeah, that is un-American. I'm pretty sure you can be deported for
well,
that.
Well, Glenn Powell made fun of me for this,
that's
as
nice.
Did Luke Jones and everybody else who was on the set that day.
Right.
So, and I still never saw it. But I heard it was great, right? Like, the second one was great?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I went back and rewatched the first one, and it's so cheesy.
Right.
It's so
40 years
80s.
Old. Right, yeah.
I don't think it aged particularly well. I mean, it's entertaining in a certain way, but you're kind of laughing at it while you're watching it. I thought Top Gun Maverick was just straight up good.
They fixed it.
Right, they did. It's a much better film.
So, for me.
Yes.
Top Gun came out in 86. I was 14.
Right.
I wanted to be an astronaut. To be an astronaut, you either had to be a scientist or an Air Force.
I thought you just wanted to be
pilot.
A baseball reporter. What did I know?
Yeah, right. So, I was. It moved me at a time. I'm not telling you it's not cheesy, but there's much more nostalgia for me in the first one. The second one is spectacular. I would say until the end. The last 15 minutes gets really corny, in my opinion. But ends well, I guess.
You go for corny, actually, in a movie right. like that. And also, I actually thought that the final like rescue scene was thrilling. Like, a lot of times I'll see an action film, and I'm just like, get on with it, man. We get it. You know, things are blowing up.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, a lot of when I'm looking at my watch the most in the theater, it's during the film's third action sequence.
Whereas, you look at your watch in a theater.
Well, I don't actually have a watch, but my hypothetical watch.
Your phone.
You're like, when is this going to end?
No. I do not condone looking at one's phone. Maybe in my purse, I'll take a
put the light down
with
that a little bit.
Come on. So that nobody can see the light. But but I actually thought that the action, I don't know why we're talking about Top Gun Maverick, but
because of D-Bot, because I had an experience you haven't had, and my wife, it was the movie that you could go to see it in, right?
Sure.
Where the seat's going to move around, and you're going to fly around,
yeah.
and all that stuff. And she didn't do it because she thought she was going to get motion sick.
Well,
so
yeah.
She really did. But the thing has a button on it where you can make it stay up late, or you can, you know, bring it down if
yeah,
you want.
Yeah, you're
to,
basically
you know?
Like, is there an earthquake outside, or is this D-Bot?
It was a magical theatrical experience that I want to bring to two people whom I know love theater in all different ways. This is a renowned film, the greatest music concert film maybe ever made,
up
right?
There.
Shot in an artsy fashion that you both are probably familiar with the film, or at least the big suit.
I've
you
seen
know,
the film,
right? Okay,
of course.
But seeing that where there is this motion that moves with the sound, that moves with the video, that makes it pleasurable. It was way more pleasurable. I was pissed when it ended. You know what I mean? To your point,
then
when
you
it ended, I'm like,
again,
I went to see it again.
Yeah.
And paid
right.
$25 to do it again.
And you know, David Byrne
later.
Is a Baltimore boy.
Of course
boy.
He is.
Yeah.
That's because he's all brilliant people.
Yeah.
Are.
I mean, David Byrne, you know, I've always loved the Talking Heads, but it's like as I get older, I think I appreciate them even more.
I agree
mean,
with that.
That entire playlist of theirs, it's all killer, no filler. I mean, it's just so good.
Man, when they start coming out there and they do Genius of Love, you little Tom Club. Alan McCallum's here. Max Weiss is here. They're going to talk about real movies. Max is going to promote Baltimore Magazine. I'm going to hold the magazine up as though Don Mohler were here. I'll put the little card out.
Thank
I'll
you.
Do all of that. Let's start with your award, and then we'll do some movies, because I did bring you guys together. And baseball. I mean, you guys share as much baseball as movies, so we'll do all of that. But you won an award. You're doing you're yeah, there you go. Absolutely.
Thank
I
you.
Mean, I remember when I used to win Best of Baltimore awards back in the day when I knew people.
I've been on your show roughly 20 times, and you've mentioned the fact that I haven't given you a Best of Baltimore award.
Doesn't matter.
Roughly 20 times.
And you, the worst part is,
yeah.
She actually did. We won Best Podcast like 5
right,
years ago.
That's true.
Right, yeah, you always bring that up, especially when you get
be more positive, right?
When you think I'm serious about it, you get all like,
well, you're slightly obsessed is the thing.
The modesty carries very well.
If you only knew
yeah. how obsessive you can be.
The next time you get with Don Mohler, okay, because you'll do that because the movies happen, right?
Right.
Ask him how little interest I really, really have in my heart of hearts of winning. And when I win, it's almost a little embarrassing. And he wanted to cut it out and make it like this big on the front of the website. And I'm like, no. And the worst thing that I would do, and the thing I would tell him, is I would never lobby for it. I would never. I'm not even a part of any of these journalistic things where they give these trophies. I'm not a part of the broadcasters broadcasting thing. I'm not even a real media member. You know this. So I don't care.
And lobbying does not work when it comes to best of
Baltimore. I would not want to lobby.
Right. So just if anybody out there listening.
If I ever win, I know it'll be legitimate.
It's getting any bright ideas. Lobbying
does not work.
They like
me. They really, really like me.
32 years into this, you know what? I'm going to say something really sweet to you that I'm sure you've heard before. Your presence is my present. You know what I mean? You come by. You love me. You do the show. Pick Jerry Coleman. Pick somebody else. It's fine. No, that's fine. It doesn't need to be me. So anyway, your award. You
yes,
won an award.
Yes, I did. I won a CRMA, which stands for City Regional Magazine Award, for the profile that I did of Jonathan Hayward, who is the new BSO maestro. And it was really special because, you know, I'm a cellist, I'm a musician, and I do think that to some extent, you know, I can speak the same language as Hayward. And, you know, it was great to meet him, to talk to him, to get to know him. I just recently bumped into him again. He's got a new baby.
I haven't had him on yet.
You would love him. He is such a sweet man. He's just interesting and thoughtful and charming, and he's an amazing conductor. And, you know, what I learned in talking to him is that the guy is just obsessed with music. Like, the way you and I might go home and read a book or read a magazine or watch a TV show, he's going to study a score. You know, he's just a massive geek when it comes to music, and that's how he overcomes the fact that he's younger than a lot of the players in the orchestra. Because he just comes correct, you know, like
you earn the respect.
Nobody
right
is going to know that piece better than him, you know. And so anyway, it was really nice to win. I wasn't there. The award ceremony took place in Cleveland.
You didn't want to go there anyway.
Well, it's funny, but here's the sad thing. Okay, so last year they had the conference in Baltimore. And it was amazing to show off all these magazine editors, to show them Baltimore. And they loved Baltimore, and we were like extremely proud. And we had been nominated for, I think, about 8 awards.
How many magazines or publications are involved in this many?
Well, just about every single.
See, everybody knows Max. Max can't hang out in Lauraville without people waving at her.
Just about every single.
She's talking about her award. Shh. Shh. Okay.
Just about every single city has at least one, if not multiple, magazines. You know, like
Washingtonian,
Boston Magazine,
South
Philadelphia.
Beach,
yeah, but even Bethesda has a magazine, and they're almost all members of this CRMA. So when we had it in Baltimore, we were like so proud of Baltimore. But so they have the award ceremony. We're up for 8 awards. We didn't win.
Oh, man. This was like
award.
When Messina didn't pitch at the All-Star game,
right?
Yes. A little bit, right?
So. And it was so sad because you could see the audience. They wanted to cheer for
us. Best supporting actress,
right.
Something, right?
So we got absolutely
shut out.
But this year.
That was last year that happened?
That was last year. So this year in Cleveland, where I'm not there and they're in Cleveland,
we take home
5 awards.
These voters woke up and
five
they understood.
Awards, yeah.
You know,
anyway.
it's like baseball, right? The attendance comes the year after you win, right? Like a little bit, right?
Absolutely true.
So, Alan, of course, you got your start in symphony, right? I mean,
I got my start with the BSO.
When I met Alan, he was doing a symphony night at Oregon Ridge back in the day.
Yeah.
That's complicated.
And my English teacher, Sue Monday, whose name came up yesterday, by the way.
I started there. I was 12 years old. My sister worked there. I went every show for the summer at Oregon Ridge. I went back the next summer, and they're like, you're here all the time. Why don't you just work? And that's literally how I got my start led me to the Kennedy Center.
See, there's another thing you have in common.
Yeah. Oh, we knew that. I mean, you know, Don.
You like Star Wars, too?
When we were hanging out with Don, we already talked about this.
Zinman, Timurkhanov, Alsop.
So what you're saying is Mueller green-roomed and screwed my show up again, is what you're telling me.
Pretty much, yeah.
He's not even here.
Right.
But the symphony side of this, when's the last time you BSO'd, Alan? I know you've had family. I mean, tough. Oriole games are tough, but like going back to the BSO and being a part of that, the reason I even bring this up, because I haven't been, and I want to have.
I like that you make it a verb, by the way.
What?
BSO'd. When did you last BSO'd?
Yeah, okay, BSO, that's
cute.
Fine.
It's
okay,
cute. It's
fine.
I'm going to start using it.
Well, I don't BS, BSO, though, you know. I PSO'd. Did I say that out loud?
Oh, that's
I did PSO. I went to see Sting with the Philadelphia Symphony Orchestra. And we did this 2 months ago, Alan, Sting, maybe 2.5 months ago.
Sounds right.
Played a Friday and a Saturday, and I'm thinking this through from, like, Sting's perspective. He knows the Philadelphia Orchestra. He's done this before.
Okay.
Because he mentioned it. He'd mentioned he'd been there before.
He did it with Sting and Paul Simon did it when I was at Stratford.
He's done it with other orchestras, right? But he knew the Philadelphia Orchestra. I'm like, what is he doing here, this one-off symphony thing, doing all the Police songs and, like, all that? And I'm thinking, he lives in New York. He just took the train down. He's here for, like, a day and a half. It's sort of a one-off to do it, but it was important to him, too, to be in front of this orchestra. It was important for me and my wife. It gave us some balance for, like, I don't know what would drag me to Philadelphia for a symphony. It was almost the Rolling Stones the other night. I went to a rock show in Philly. I almost went to see Chris Stapleton and Marcus King last week in Philly. I live on the north side now, so Philly's easier than, like, Manassas. But to go to a symphony in Philly and go to that beautiful, I think Kimmel is what it's called.
Kimmel.
I mean, it was a breathtaking place. And we had this, and we sat in the front row of the balcony. We got a late drop ticket for $179, so we had $500 Thursday night in Philadelphia. We had a magical experience, and I said to my wife, "Why don't we BSO more? Is that better than that BSO? Why don't we BSO more?" And I think having a young kid dog, you writing about it, you winning an award about it, us talking about it, at least lets people know that Justin Tucker will come down and sing with them.
So look, right? Yeah, I was with the BSO literally from age 12 to, I think, 45.
Okay.
46, because they were out at Strathmore.
30
well,
years
right?
of your life.
Without a doubt.
How many shows a year? 50, 100 in a lot of cases?
More than that. But, well,
wow.
maybe 75 shows, but two or three shows a weekend, right? So you're, I mean, back to back to
sure.
back. So I'm with the National Symphony's in my hall now at the Kennedy Center. And, for example, they do a thing with Ben Folds called Declassified, which is really cool.
You told me I'd like it.
There's one tomorrow night where you have modern artists paired with the orchestra. You have orchestrators who come in and work with the artists and pair it with a symphonic element. And it's spectacular. It really is.
Sting with the Philadelphia Symphony Orchestra, like, it made us cry. It was so beautiful.
They did Killer Mike, who's a rap artist.
Atlanta,
was
of course.
With the orchestra a month ago. And you wouldn't believe that.
Rapping, reading, a little bit of both.
His music
okay.
with the orchestra. You wouldn't believe that it's possible. But it's really amazing. And smart orchestras are not just doing 200 or 300-year-old pieces anymore, which will never go away and shouldn't.
But they do Star Wars.
But to
right?
be able to bring in new audiences,
sure.
to expand their palette, to be relevant.
But
with
the BSO does
forward.
That. They
Absolutely.
Have this Pulse series.
Absolutely.
I want to say her name is Esmeralda Spalding. Is that her name? Yeah, I saw her with the BSO. Like, there's a lot of cool artists who come to the BSO as well.
Good. I'm glad we talked about that today.
Now, here's an interesting question.
See what your award did? Your award pays forward the symphony.
So. I overheard an interesting argument among very respected musical scholars. Is John Williams, the guy who, you know, did all the music for Star Wars, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Jaws, etc., is he going to be remembered in the same breath as a Mozart and a Beethoven 200 years from now? And that was the debate.
I'm wondering that about Billy Joel and Paul McCartney.
Right. Yeah.
And Mick Jagger, right?
Well, I think
good composers borrow, great composers steal outright.
And Williams has stolen from the best of them. It's, to me, the music is excellent. I'm not sure if it works separate from the films. You know, I mean, there is nothing quite like hearing the Indiana Jones theme song and you know Indy is about to show up. It is so stirring. But
Disney's that way too.
Right.
And Disney's not even really the film, right? I mean, you know, the Disney songs are
right.
soundtrack of your life.
Right. So when you hear them, they're either evoking the film or in the film, they work so beautifully. I'm just wondering, and it's still an open question, you know, 200 years from now, if people don't know Raiders, will that music still have an impact?
I would argue they're asking the wrong question.
Yeah, okay. Oh.
The question that they should ask is, what should he be remembered for?
Okay.
And I think that he should be remembered for the fact that he inspired an entire generation of artists, musicians, conductors, composers, with the work that he did, getting them interested in something beyond popular music, more than you would have heard on B104 growing up in the 70s.
Something where a cellist can get a gig.
I can't tell you how many.
Right, indeed.
All right.
I can't tell you how many musicians that I've heard say, John Williams, the music that I heard when I was 5 watching Star Wars inspired me to move on to become a professional.
Right.
And to do that. And whatever you think about his music, and I've heard it described from the he steals to, you know, he finds color in things that people can't see, that he has awake, he kept awake the idea that music was something bigger or could be bigger than what we know in terms of popular music, I think is what he should be remembered for. Because that generation that went on has inspired more as they've 50 years after he really hit with Jaws and Star Wars and E.T., so I think he should be much like I can't believe I can't think of his name right now.
A composer?
Maestro.
Oh, Bradley Cooper? Oh, Leonard Bernstein.
Leonard Bernstein. Much like Leonard Bernstein. I mean, as much
I was going to go with Hamlish, but okay, go ahead.
As much as Leonard Bernstein can be remembered for his scores and the work that he did on Broadway, that he did the Young People's Concerts in the 60s that no one that isn't 50 or older, I don't remember it, but my parents, my mother certainly remembered it, that it inspired kids who didn't have access to going to see orchestras, made a huge impact on them and kept it alive and kept it moving. And as much as his music and the things that he conducted or composed, he should be remembered for that. And I think John Williams, the torch gets passed to the next generation through the music that he created for movies.
My audience is not used to hearing him talk about anything other than the starting rotation right now.
Right.
And
sorry.
What's going on
sorry
with the bullpen.
Sorry to elevate the conversation.
Alan McCallum's here.
My bad.
Max Weiss is here. We're at Coco's. Max won an award, which led us into this symphony conversation. I didn't even think I was going to be talking about it. We haven't talked about movies yet. We haven't talked about baseball yet. Your magazine, you're doing something really cool tonight. You know, when I had Ron out, you guys, and I haven't talked to you about this.
Yeah.
I'm sure you were there. Ron was there when you brought John Waters, Brooks Robinson, Barbara McCulsky.
Yeah.
Like,
that also won an award,
yeah,
by the way.
Well, it should have,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
And we've now since lost Brooks, and I, you know, I don't even know who else was in that picture at that time. But you guys do these sort of event-driven things. You're doing an event tonight.
And Game Changers.
Game Changers for you. You also do Best Of. You do all these
right,
different things.
Best Of.
You've had a crab feast last couple years. You're
We're
doing,
having a crab feast this year.
What's Game Changers? Give me Game Changers. I want to be one of those. I don't want to be Best Of anymore. I've already done that.
Well, so Game Changers is about people affecting positive change in Baltimore. It's just telling the stories.
It says Baltimore Positive right here.
About it's telling the stories about, you know, the people who are really rolling up their sleeves and working to make Baltimore a better place. And we, you
Isn't
know.
Isn't it awesome to meet those people and write about those people?
It really is. And, you know, we do feel like people tend to tell a lot of negative stories about Baltimore. Mm-hmm. And we don't only tell positive stories about Baltimore, but it's really inspiring to talk to these people who, you know, they walk the walk and they talk the talk and they're really, really putting in the time. And so we put out this Game Changers section every single year. This year it has a cover story written by yours truly about Ego Nwodim from Saturday Night Live.
Right.
Who is amazing. So just very briefly, she is in love with the art of improv. So she's taking improv, you know, the whole yes and, the whole, you know, on stage, just kind of making it up as you go along. And she's bringing it to Baltimore City school children. Because she thinks that you learn a lot about listening, you learn about self-confidence, you learn about working in a group, active listening, they call it. So she's bringing the art of improv to Baltimore school kids. So that's how we ended up writing about her. So, yeah, if you flip through, you'll see about a lot of amazing
people. I can't wait
people.
To meet her. I've been doing improv for 32 years. Right here.
Right.
Every day.
You're improvising right now. Yeah.
I am making it up as I go along. I mean, there's no script here.
That's true. That's true. Anyway, so she's amazing, a rising star. She's not coming tonight to the party because she's a little busy, but the governor himself, Wes Moore, will be there tonight at
Center
Stage.
Well, he's a game changer under himself.
Oh, he was our cover boy for us in February, and handsome man.
I love Wes.
Can be said.
I'm waiting for him to come back on the show. Wes, I see you. He's fixing the bridge, especially today.
He's busy.
You know, since the last time we got together, I mean, the biggest story in our world was to bend the bridge.
That picture, I don't know which outlet did it, of Brandon Scott and Wes Moore with their arms around
yeah,
each other.
Yeah, the day after.
And their heads down and almost in tears, to taking comfort in each other. That was one of the most powerful images that I've ever seen. You know, just two black men who love this city so much and also working together. You know, it's beautiful to see that when politics works the way it's supposed to work, you know.
Horrible that a bridge has to go down to figure all this out, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, as far as picking the thing up here, the Orioles have been a part of that. Now, we'll get the movies because I want to get your recommendations and all that. But you guys love the Orioles. We're in the middle of Oriole madness here. Today's the only show that I didn't attach to an afternoon Oriole game. Like last week, we were, you know, we were there before the Oriole afternoon game against the Blue Jays. Next week, it's the afternoon game against the Yankees. It's a home game here this week, so I didn't want to sort of – that's why I didn't do the show here tomorrow, because the Braves are playing, and I ain't seen the Braves play a game all year. The Orioles have been a heartbeat of the city in a way. You love them. You love them. I cover them even though they don't love me. And this has been going on for years and years and years. There's something really different about what's going on. Ownership, Peter, we can get through all of that, but the – I mean, the owner only pops up to splash people once in a while. He hasn't done anything. Greg Bader's still running. Nothing's changed about the team.
It's early.
Except the team on the field.
It's very, very early.
The team on the field is, as we sit here five in a row, pitching and all that, they're extraordinary. And I say to my wife every night, I've been married 21 years. My wife knows of my baseball thing. Every night we have to have the game on because it's become the heartbeat of the city. And that's a good thing. You're wearing your Oriole hat, too.
Nestor, we talked about this the last time I was on with you. I've waited my entire adult life for this window of Orioles baseball,
right,
where, I mean, they've been good before, they've won before.
But you haven't really believed before.
No, it's not about belief. It's about the ability to sustain something for a 6 or 7 year period.
That's the belief.
And it's clear that these players, Rutschman, Henderson, Westberg, guys that haven't even gotten here yet, are for real. And they're here at a time when they're better than almost everybody else. And does that turn into championships? No, not necessarily. I mean, we play in an age where the best team rarely wins the World Series anymore. But to watch this team play and know every night they have a chance to win. A guy that will remain nameless, who like he's like, oh, well, they're four behind the Yankees. They're not going to catch. They're catching. It's over. And I was like, clearly the football mentality has entered the line. Like, it was one game. They lost two or three in a row. It's June, and they're not – they're two and a half back, but they're one game
Alan,
back
Alan, you're
in
not a football guy,
column.
And let me say this. With this football turnover, with the Chad Steeles throwing people like me out in empty seats, people come to the games every week, and they cheer when we're on offense. They just don't know. And I think the baseball thing is – we're in a baseball city and all that, but we haven't been in a lot of pennant races. And this isn't even a normal pennant race. Like, I can't get worked up about the Yankee games next week because I'm trying to figure out with Luke whether we really want to finish in first place and take a week off.
That's
or whether
right.
we want to go play 3 days in a row and take our chances on getting knocked out in a day and a half.
That is exactly right. That's the question, whether or not it's better to win. Because recent history would tell you that it's not the best thing to win 100 games and take that week off because they tend to go out in the next round.
Didn't the Rangers, they just kept on going.
The Rangers just kept going.
Well, a lot of, in the modern era, this has been an issue also in football.
Yeah.
As you know, you take a week off and the other, but
the Dodgers, notion that the you, Orioles got bounced.
The notion that you want the Yankees sitting at home hitting fungos and you have to go play Cleveland or whatever and you got 48 hours to get, that's a scare. So for that, I want them to win, but I don't need them to win. It's not like they're going to be a playoff team, all things considered. Now I'm thinking, like, you better win game one. And it's terrible in June. I'm thinking like that.
So the one thing I've loved about this team, and it was sort of true last year too, is that they never allow that sort of pessimistic Baltimore baseball fan to emerge, right? Like, our pessimistic muscle has been absolutely hardened over the years. So we go to Toronto, we blow them out in the first two, and then we lose the next two. So that was kind of a bummer, right? Like, it looked like it was going to be a guaranteed series win. Instead, it's a split, and you're feeling, oh, no.
Here it comes.
It's bad.
They're going to lose 9 of 12.
What do we do after that? We sweep the Rays. We take the first one against the Braves. And I feel like that's what this team has done. It's like they haven't allowed us to get overly neurotic because they're just so great.
Well, the consecutive series not being swept run of, what, 108, I think they got to?
Yeah.
I mean, you couldn't, right? Because they never allowed it to happen. Even before Corbin Burnes got here, who is a bona fide number one starter, they never let that happen. I mean, and
Luke reminded me this morning they're not going to be able to pay him. But it's another thing altogether.
Well, I mean,
so.
Rubenstein, he can print money. Maybe they are going to be.
Well, maybe you've talked to him and I haven't, being in the media. But, you know, it is interesting. And I'll take this to a different level with both of you, because I talk about this all day. And you can go back over the last 8 weeks with Luke and I, where we're like, oh, my God, they lost Means and Wells. What are they going to, you know, moments. You know, not Jackson Holliday, who's 10 years old, and he'll figure it out. I'm not up and down on any of that. But I am up and down on Bradish's arm being, and Rodriguez missing some starts. And Burnes being flawless thus far, right? And the notion that Irvin's been better than expected, my Venezuelan brother, Alberto Suarez, doing his thing. You
How
know
about
what I mean?
Him?
Right. And so they're doing things they shouldn't be doing or wouldn't be doing, but I think there's an inspirational part to your point. When I see the Braves back in the day, I stepped up, you step up. It's your turn. And maybe Cade Povich, that becomes something for him. But all of the negativity about the pitching and guys getting injured, they just win every night. They win your confidence back at 6:35 every night, because you look up and they're up 3-0 in the second inning. A lot.
And as much as Elias and Sigmundell get ripped for not doing this right, not doing that right, these guys are really smart. And they go out and find pieces that that nobody expects to be useful, and they are. Are they 100%? No. Nobody ever is. But, you know, you say Cole Irvin's not very good. Well, Cole Irvin pitched in Oakland, and when he pitched in Oakland, he wasn't a Cy Young, but he wasn't bad. He had a bad year.
He loves dogs and cats, so I like him. He's my favorite.
And then the other thing that I've been really enjoying is I'm the kind of person where if I go to an Oriole game and there's like a lot of Red Sox fans in the stands or a lot of Yankee fans, I get really upset. Like, I can't.
Don't go to the Phillies game Saturday and Sunday.
No, but that's just the point. The point is that the Orioles fans are now turning up in droves. They're
in Tampa.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Even in Tampa, Colton Cowser's getting to the plate, and you're hearing moos. You know,
I heard moos at the bar in Costas the other day. Everybody mooed when he hit the triple.
You're hearing during the national anthem. I mean, so this team is traveling, but it's also like it really used to irritate me when I would go to. You know,
you would avoid Yankee games.
Yes, I would literally avoid Yankee games because I just couldn't. I had no chill about it. I got like my blood pressure would go up. You know, so now
this is Baltimore. Sit down.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, exactly.
Well, but the thing was, when you went to those games and they were there, it was only half annoying that they were there. What the other half was that they knew they were going to win, and so did you.
They had reason to cheer, and we didn't.
And now, they still show up. Maybe not in the same numbers, but when they show up, they get silent. A lot.
By the way, I invited you to that afternoon game against the Yankees. I went to the after. I invited
I had
you
to
here.
Work.
You're here today. It's like Max. She didn't need to give me any awards. She's here today.
I
don't need to go to an Oriole game with you. We haven't been to an Oriole game in 15 years.
15 years.
Yeah. So.
You know why? Because he shows. He'll call me like a dedic. I got a ticket. Let's go. I'm like, I have.
Okay.
I
so my friends
DC.
At Curio Wellness, Wendy called me. It's back in April, night before the game. She's like, look, I got tickets tomorrow. You know, like, I have several. I'm like, you want two or four? I'm like, well, give me four. I'll call some friends, you know. And I started calling around. And it took me, you know, 15, 18, no offense, but you were on the first of the list. But when you said no,
you
it kicks down
list?
The line. And
I
next
understand.
Thing you know, Brian Poole's there and Greg Landry's there and Chris Pica, who works there, he took one of the tickets at the last minute. So I wound up filling them. We got that. Their seats are five rows off the on-deck circle on the third base side.
Oh, beautiful.
So I'm on the Yankees on deck circle. I got to keep you on mic. You
keep drinking.
And you keep drinking. You've been hanging out with Moeller. He takes himself off the mic, too. You got.
Sorry.
So get down to our seats. And this was when Soto stared down.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Oh, I love that.
Okay, so we're there on Thursday. It was 98 degrees. It was just swelteringly awful hot. And we kicked their ass. I mean, it was 6-1, fourth inning or something like that. We're just crushing them. And I was just that guy. I'm not running for Republican office, but I took a page out of the Robin Ficker handbook. And I decided to heckle the Yankees players professionally.
Nice.
On behalf of Greg Bader and the entire Orioles organization, I sat down off the on-deck circle and just let Aaron Judge have it. I let Soto have it. You know, it was fun.
Absolutely.
So disliking
Thank
the
you
Yankees.
For your service.
Well, there was a Yankees fan in the other section who was Hispanic, is Puerto Rican. I went up making friends with him. He was heckling in Spanish. The Orioles players. Especially the ones like Santander that understood what he was saying. But for me, like Aaron Judge, who's like this tall in the batter's box, when the ball was low and they called it a ball, I stood up and screamed, "He's 7 feet tall! The strike zone's this big!" And Judge looks over the shoulder seat, and I'm like, "Gotcha, dude. You know, you're not in the Bronx anymore, big boy. You know." So like I pulled an Elaine Bennis, if you know what I mean. Like I got right about it on behalf of you and everyone that's ever hated a Yankees fan.
Love that.
Alan Callum is here. Max is here. Go ahead, Max.
I always say that all the seats at Camden Yards are good. There's like no bad seats at Camden Yards, but those seats, just a few rows back, first base side, third base side, home plate. Those are the best seats in baseball. I mean, you could practically reach out and touch the players, and they absolutely can hear you when you're heckling.
Oh, absolutely.
So heckle responsibly.
When Soto struck out looking,
oh,
I'm staring at you. I'm staring at you.
I was watching, you know, you watch MLB Network, and they spent that whole, after Soto did the whole stare down.
Oh, yeah.
And he hits the home run the next at bat or whatever. They spent the whole next day talking about it. And focusing
on Soto,
I was like,
"It's New York.
They lost. He hit. They lost. Who cares? On to the next
thing."
He's
such a fan. He's upset about this, isn't he?
Oh, I was upset too. No, I mean, I kind of loved it because he stared us down like he's this big tough guy, and then we killed him.
And they killed him.
But
who's your favorite player?
Say,
go ahead.
I will. Well,
you will say what? Finish your thought.
My favorite player is the reason I said well is Cedric Mullins, and he certainly has the yips right now.
Yeah.
It's a little alarming.
You staying with him?
Oh, of course. I'm Cedric for life. But, you know, besides that, of course, I love Gunnar. I love Adley. I love them all. I mean, Ryan Mountcastle, can we talk about him? Here's my question about Gunnar Henderson. Is he as great as I think he is?
Yes.
Is he like Mike Trout great?
Not yet.
But
whoa. What's wrong?
He's not Mike Trout.
Well, he's only done it for a minute. That's your point.
His bet right now, he's hitting 260. He's hitting a lot of home runs. He can walk. He's got great. He's a great infielder.
Don't think he's ever going to hit 312?
I didn't say that.
And draw 120 walks?
I think this is his second full year in the big leagues, and we'll see. But he's a great player.
And it's funny you say he's hitting 260, because doesn't it feel like he's hitting 300? And I think that's because he has the clutch gene. Like, it just seems like in every big moment, he comes through.
Nah, it feels like he's hitting 260 to me.
See, the Mountcastle thing to me, it feels like he's a perennial 240 hitter,
what?
And he's hitting 300, right? Mm. So, like, to me, it feels like some of these guys are producing at a level where I'm like, my favorite player, I think, I like Westberg because of what he represents.
Oh, he's so great.
In sort of that Bobby Grich, Rich Dower kind of way, but he's better than that. I'm a Rutschman guy. I've just decided that he's a catcher. I have special. He has rah-rah. He has spirit.
And
in a sport where you're not supposed to be that spirited and come out, you come rah-rah the pitcher, they're like, "What do you think, you're Mickey Mantle or whatever?" You know, all this Joe Cool macho BS that baseball has. He doesn't carry that with him, and I've never met him. I don't know him. Maybe one day Greg Bader will give me my press pass back, my legitimate press pass back. Well, I have to say that today because, like, we didn't have a representative at the game last night because my reporter was doing his Bible study last night and couldn't do it. So we won't have a reporter there this weekend because my reporter's sister is 9 months and 6 days pregnant.
Wow.
So they're making nieces and nephews this week. So just, and we have Raven training camp. So I it does piss me off, but one of the things that really does bother me is, like, I'd love to know Rutschman. I'd love to sit and talk to Rutschman about baseball, you know? And all of these guys, when Rob Long has them or when Melanie Newman or when they're doing the post game, other than when they're spitting the sunflower seeds on each other in the dugout, which I don't like at all because it's my only time I get with Colton Cowser because that's what I get. My wife always says, they seem like nice guys.
Yeah.
They seem like good guys. And even when my wife acknowledges the problems I've had with new management, which is really old management, she's always like, man, the players, we sit every night and watch them, and I don't root against them. I don't, you know, like, I root for them because they're likable.
I hear people talk about, oh, why don't we go get Trevor Bauer? Like, I want nothing to do with that Joker.
Well, I hope they don't bring him in after the things they've said to me about
there's nothing about abuse. That man that interests me. Look, I'll say this to you. Before they drafted Adley Rutschman, I said out loud, I wouldn't draft a catcher first. So I wouldn't do it.
Well, you saw Wieters, too. You get run down.
To this day, I still wouldn't draft a catcher because their shelf life is short. And I thought Bobby Witt was going to be the star that he is. Now, they're both great players. And Adley, the first year of Adley's first season he was here, I thought he walks too much. He never swings the bat. Last year, you could see him trying to put it together. And this year, it looks like he's putting the game together, becoming the complete
player. Luke and I did an hour on this at Fadley's last week about walks and how they're not walking as much, but that's a byproduct of them telling him to get more aggressive.
Right. It's fascinating to watch his progression as an offensive player. But what can't be denied, and I certainly didn't know this at the time, is that the day he stepped on the field, they stopped losing. And what
for that alone, he's the right choice.
Obviously.
Over Bobby
there,
Witt.
And there are 100 reasons you could give for why that happened. But the intangible of Adley Rutschman and when that happened cannot be denied.
And can't be measured yet.
It can't be measured yet.
And it's not measured in his average. It's not,
it's not.
Whether he's hitting 260 or not.
And, yes, so being on the field and being able to talk to him would help fill that out. I don't know what the entire answer is. I love Cedric Mullins. And I'm praying that he comes through. And I'll be honest, I'm a black man in Baltimore. And while I love this team, a lot of the guys on the team look the same. And I think it's important in Baltimore to have
I've tried
players.
To express this to Greg Bader and Mr. Rubenstein's people that it's important that a Venezuelan media member would be, you know, because they're Venezuelan players.
I think it's important in Baltimore to have some players of color on the team.
I agree with that.
And I want Cedric to. And Cedric has done it, right? I believe in him. We'll see what happens. If guys lose it, and if he's lost it, then you move on. But of the young guys, Jordan Westberg, I love this kid. I love the way he plays.
Even after two errors in the last couple of nights.
I have no interest in let the kids play. I want guys that act like you've been there. And you see he sweats every at bat. His mind is on every play. There's nothing about this kid I've seen so far that I don't like. I don't get me wrong. I love Adley, I love Gunner, but Jordan Westbrook's like my spirit animal on the Orioles in terms of how guys
he kind of play. I mean, he first of all, he really broke through this year. Like, yeah. I didn't realize he was this good, and now he just seems to me like a guy who's going to be a perennial 300 hitter. He just seems to have figured out hitting, and to me, batting for average in some ways is more exciting than batting for power. Like, just
show
me.
Well, the power's coming on for him now. I mean, because he flashed that all through his career.
Well,
he hit home runs.
What's even better is that he's able to hit the ball to the opposite field and to right center. And certainly with the new dimensions of Camden Yards, that is key for right-handed hitters. You've got to be able to hit the ball the other way and hit it hard.
So. Yeah, and they're such nice – I mean, they're not just nice guys. They're like – enjoying it so much, you can tell
it's fresh.
They're having
them.
Fun. They don't take themselves too seriously. Remember last year with the track suits and the sunglasses. You know,
they're the only team with a quad water bomb in the
hydration station.
Right.
You know, the vibes are just immaculate right now at Camden Yards. That's
you're not wearing the cow outfit, none of that, and the cow suits or no.
I mean, if somebody gave me a cow suit to wear to Camden Yards, I would 100% wear it.
I'll think about it.
Colton's got to make a little more contact, and then we'll talk.
Well, about it. He started out strong.
Been a little Mendoza here through May. Yeah. Alan McCallum's here. Max is here. I want to take a break and then do movies. Can we do that? Because we've been at this too long. Max is here with Baltimore Magazine. She's the editor-in-chief. Never to be confused with the executive editor. Alan's the executive of all things baseball around here. And you can find him down at the Kennedy from time to time. And also here at Baltimore Positive. We're here promoting the Maryland Lottery. Our friends at Liberty Pure Solutions keep my water clean, as well as Jiffy Lube Multicare. I have the double Gold Rush Doubler Sevens. I got to start saying that the right way before Roz gets mad at me. They're fresh. They're new. These are the first ones. They're going to be lucky. One for Alan, one for Max. Movies next, all right? Movies?
Sounds
yes?
Good. Sounds
Think
good.
Think it through, because I don't have anything to say about it other than I haven't already said.
I think we'll
Been
be able
one
to
movie this year twice
out.
In a D-box seat. Back for more with Max and Alan. We are at Coco's Pub, where the coconut shrimp are delicious and the conversation's hot.